Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Another incredible episode of the Rants and Gems Real Estate Podcast. My name is Matt Garland, NMLS number 58700, better known as MG the Mortgage Guy.
And my name is Kiana Watson, license number 317576, real estate broker extraordinaire. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're looking extraordinary today,
too.
I mean, this color is like,
you know. I'm trying to tell you. I'm coming with the fashions. If you're doing it, if you want to do anything, if you watch this show, you just need to come for the fashions. I came to deliver.
Nah, you came with a cape on one of these episodes. That's when I knew it was serious. I said, this woman came on a cape. Oh, shit. All right, so enough of this, right? Let's introduce our lovely guest to the left of you.
All right, right here to the left of me, we have Charm City Buyers.
Let's give it up for them, y'all.
Let's give it up for them. So you guys, they're going to tell a little bit about themselves, but they are from Baltimore. They are basically developing almost the entire city of Baltimore, if you leave it up to me to tell it. And what I love about them is they have been out here from bandos to blocks. So they have started from the bottom, and now they are here. Mm-hmm. And they're here to share a lot of their gifts with us, some special announcements, and just let's talk about how you've started to build this wealth and build community through real estate.
So let's talk about it.
Yeah, thanks for having us. So I'm Kiara.
And I'm Khalil.
And so we really started investing in real estate fresh out of college.
Okay.
We were a year out. We were really kind of going through this transition, even as a couple, to say, if we're doing this thing together, like, what does that look like long term? You know, if I have my own goals, he has his own goals. If we're going to do this together, what does this look like as a unit? And so we started to play around with a lot of different ideas of investing in businesses. And at that time, I guess it's kind of new because now everyone's doing like vending machines and stuff like that. Like, we looked at a little bit of everything. And real estate was just one of those things that checked the most boxes, and we dove really far into making that happen.
Yeah, our criteria was basically like community building, right? Yeah. Positive impact on the world, generating wealth, and something we can pass on.
Mm-hmm.
So real estate was it for us.
Yeah.
And ever since we started, we never turned back. We just kept moving full steam ahead.
Nice, I love it. So when did you guys fall in love with real estate?
So real estate was actually something I had always been interested in. So we take it all the way back. So Khalil's born and raised in Baltimore. I'm from Pennsylvania. And so growing up, I learned about a town called Hensonville that my ancestors started in the 1820s.
Wait, your ancestors started a town?
Yeah, did it?
Yes.
Shit.
So
this is good already.
Right.
We just started.
So it's called Hensonville, and it's actually the land that Lincoln University, the first HBCU, sits on, is the land of Hensonville.
Damn.
Wow. And so I was raised learning that story and the power of that and owning land and real estate and those types of things. And so it kind of was like ingrained in me as a seed to be really interested in that transformation, right? Building neighborhoods, building communities, doing real estate. So that was kind of my start. And then for him, he's always been really entrepreneurial.
Yeah, for me, it was entrepreneurship from the jump, always, period. The corporate world, it wasn't quite my thing. It didn't resonate. It wasn't something that I knew I would love. So from like starting at high school with a little company, dancing and doing parties and hosting events and things, to like college and then moving forward, I always knew that something about me was going to be in the leadership role, owning some kind of business. Mm-hmm. And when Kiara introduced the idea of real estate and buying properties and stuff, I'm like, say less.
Mm-hmm. Say less. Keep it going.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
I love the partnership.
Yeah.
How long you guys been together for?
About 13 years.
Yeah, 13
years. We've been together 13 years. We've been married for 8 years.
Yeah, we've been married for 8 years.
That deserves a hint.
Yep. Yeah.
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 We met in college, so you know how college is, but we fell in love immediately, and it was like, all right, this is it.
Immediately.
No, 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 I said that sounded like all caps.
I'm dead serious. Let him know.
So check it out. How we met, right? A week before we met, I saw her in a dream. A week before we met, I saw her in a dream. Mm. And I could barely see her. There was a silhouette on the outside. And I woke up, I'm like, I don't know what that was, but whatever. All right, cool. A week later, my boys hit me up on the football team. We go into Lafayette College, her college. It was a rival school. I went to Lehigh. Mm-hmm. And I landed at her apartment, and it was like three guys, three girls. The music was good. The drinks were pouring. It was just a vibe, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So when I saw her sitting on a couch, I'm like, that's her. So, of course, I had to introduce myself. One thing led to another. You know, 8 years later, 8 years of marriage later, mm-hmm. here we are.
Man, that's amazing. I love that. I love that. That's dope. Yep. College sweethearts mm-hmm. to buying freaking bandos.
Yeah.
How the hell did y'all start buying bandos together? So, talk to us about that.
So I graduated, Khloe graduated a year before me. When I graduated college, I actually moved to Connecticut. So I was in Hartford, Connecticut. And Khloe always says he followed love because he was in Baltimore. Yeah. So he moved to Connecticut with me for a little while. And so we're both working full time. And I was like, you know, this really isn't it. Like, I can't sit here and wait until a pension. I'm not about to fool with these people and put all of everything I want into, you know, what this company decides to do for me. And he was the same way. And he was already entrepreneurial. He's like, well, what are we finna do? And so we bought our first property. And it was a 3-unit shell in Hartford, Connecticut. And our goal at first was we were going to wholesale because that's what everybody wants to do when they start real estate, right? And so we're going to wholesale. And so all the numbers were good. We bought the property all cash, $26,000, because we had saved up. And
what year was this?
This was
2012.
2012. We bought it all cash and we were going to wholesale it. And so what happened was at that time, we were going to RIA meetings. Like, we were trying to get in the room with people and network. And nobody would touch it. And so what we realized at one point, we were sitting on the stoop of the house after we bought it. Because we were feeling ourselves at that point. Like, we're young.
Of course.
We bought this house.
Yeah.
Bought
a whole house.
I'm sitting on my stoop, right? Yeah. Like, I'm going to sit on my stoop. So we sat on there. We were just sitting. And somebody was walking up the street and was like, hey, yo, y'all just bought this house? And we were like, yeah. And he was like, don't y'all know this street called Murder? And we was like,
what?
Excuse me?
Say that.
It's called
that,
Murder?
Called, don't you know this street called Murder? And we was like,
sir, I did not know that.
You're right.
Tell me more.
And so what we learned was that because we're in a new area, new neighborhood, I'm not from Connecticut, Khloe's not from Connecticut, so we didn't know all the pieces, we knew the numbers. Mm-hmm. And so what we found was that people were shying away from this neighborhood and this space because of reputation that had gained over all this time. And so, but we doubled down and we're like, no, our numbers are good. This is a 3-unit property. There's tons of opportunity. We finna do this ourselves. And so, we did some networking, connected with actually a nonprofit in the area that was focused on that neighborhood, ended up doing $120,000 renovation for our very first deal.
So you're $150,000 in.
About $150,000 in. We finished that renovation probably about 6 months or so. And we brought in about $2,700 a month in that cash flow, you know, after everything, probably cash flow about $1,100-$1,200 a month.
Nice.
On that first deal.
On a Murder Street.
On Murder Street. And let me tell you, that at that time, it was just us, right?
Fast forward to now, there's a community garden across the street. They repaved the street. There's speed humps to slow people down. There are multiple other rehabs mm-hmm. and developments happening. We feel like we transformed the area, or at least played a part in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's dope.
That's dope. People seeing the opportunity. Because what we found, and this kind of laid the foundation for everything that we do, even in Baltimore now, that we have to see opportunities in our neighborhoods first. Right. And so just because someone said and named this street Murder doesn't mean that this street, the people on this street and these properties don't have value. Right. Mm. And so it's only as valuable as we decide and we put that energy in that. And so we put that energy there and decided, like, we can do this. And these people deserve to have quality housing. You know, we don't need to walk past bandos every day on our way to school. How do we take that ownership and be able to do that ourselves?
Gentrify our own hoods.
All right. I love that. So Bandos.
You
know, that's slang term. Can we kind of break that down for the audience? What people, you know, people may not know what that is.
Yeah. So bandos, that's like the boarded up, especially in Baltimore, right? You think of the boarded up, yeah, shelled up houses. They've mm-hmm. fallen down. Like the houses we buy are a front wall and a tree growing up the middle.
Yeah, they're, okay, they're vacant properties.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Properties that have been disinvested for years.
Yep.
Properties that, like Kiara said, there's trees and vegetation growing out, spray paint, negative energy in mm-hmm. and around them. Mm-hmm. Those are the bandos and the vacants. Yeah.
So how did you guys go from Connecticut to Baltimore?
So we came back home. Okay. I convinced her that I came up to Connecticut for love. Let's go back home,
yeah,
right? So we came back home. We transferred our jobs. It was a whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. We had a rehab happening. I was in grad school. Kiara transferred her job. She was pregnant at the time. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of stuff happening at once. But we told our story to our friends and our family. Like, look, we bought this property. We didn't tell them beforehand. We told them after the fact, mm-hmm. after it was stable, after we started getting some tenants. Mm-hmm. And they were like, whoa, you're not in real estate. You don't have a history of this. You don't have friends and family or background in this. How are you doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then text after text and picture message and email after and call after call. Like, people want to know how to do this and how we got started.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
we started in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And what year did y'all go back to Baltimore?
2013.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And what was your first project in Baltimore? How did that look?
Yeah.
Because
right.
Baltimore's kind of
you gotta know what you're doing.
It's kind of the wire in some places.
Oh, see, look. See, I don't want to fight you about the wire thing. Trigger for me.
That's not trigger
this
nothing.
This is your
let's keep
spot.
It 100 though.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same. Let's talk about Baltimore. Like,
yeah,
really, like you come back home,
yeah,
and now you're looking at these numbers and you're looking at these bandos, you're looking at these opportunities.
Yeah.
And you're saying create your own opportunity. How did you guys get started in Baltimore?
Yeah. So the Connecticut property really set that foundation for seeing the opportunity, right? And so we got to Baltimore and it said, okay, how do we find that same opportunity here? Because we're driving around and to me, all I saw was opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw, you know, kind of that same thing, like this street called murder. So I'm not touching that. That's what I saw in Baltimore. And so what we did was pay attention to what was happening and what was coming. And so the very first property in Baltimore, there was this area that was developing called Patterson Park, which probably 5-10 years before that was tons of bandos,
yeah,
right?
It was rough.
And so it was a lot of development happening. And so we were seeing a lot of gentrification starting to pop off at Patterson Park. And then we also knew Johns Hopkins Hospital is still the largest property owner in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And so they were buying up everything. And so we knew that they were making plans to do something. And so we bought in the middle of those two areas, right? So we bought a property smack dab in the middle, understanding that there's only so many properties. And so the Patterson Park development was going to grow and push. And so was Johns Hopkins. And so it was going to hit that property at some point. So we're being strategic, right?
Mm.
So that's number one. Number two, we bought it well. So we bought it from, and it was an auctioneer that was selling the property in McKeldry Park, actually. And so they were selling it, and that's cool. But in real estate, right, you only get what you can ask for. And so most people with an auctioneer, you think you got to buy it all cash or something fast. We asked them to seller finance it. And
listen,
we said,
we young, we bold. We just did our first triplex. Like, ain't nothing we can't do. Go ahead,
right,
ask the question,
yeah,
see what they say.
Yeah, and we had just done that deal with a nonprofit. So it set that foundation for how creative you can get with getting access to funding and money for deals. And so our second property, the one in Baltimore, we seller financed that.
So break down seller financing,
yep,
for folks who don't know what that is.
Absolutely. So we said, rather than paying you whatever it was, like 20...
A little less than 30.
Yeah, a little less than 30,000. Rather than paying that to you all at once, would you be willing to hold the note? Would you be willing for me to pay you over time instead of paying you all up front? So we ended up having a mortgage similar to what you would have with a bank, but it was just the seller was the one that was the bank.
Was the bank.
And so we did, I think it was like 3 years, mm-hmm, a 3-year seller finance deal with them. We were paying them $675 a month for that 3 years. We worked with a private lender, so an individual who had money that was just sitting there. They paid, we had a down payment, so they put money up towards the down payment. And then we rented that property for about $1,100 a month.
Mm. All right.
So that was the second deal. We probably put maybe 10 to 15 into it, bought it for about 30, 10 to 15 into it. So we're all in 45 and rented it for $1,100 a month. Now, fast forward about five, 6 years later, houses in that same neighborhood are selling for $160,000,
$170,000. Damn. Oh, that's Damn. Good.
So how did you guys find out about Johns Hopkins? You know, because I think that's one key thing that people miss out on is research and finding out what the corporations are doing. So how did you guys go about finding out that Johns Hopkins was going to go out, was buying all this property?
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In the area.
So for us, it's really important to get specific and like zero down and get very niche. Mm-hmm. So Baltimore is it, right? We focus on Baltimore and we can learn as much as possible about Baltimore through other developers, through newspapers, through TV shows, news, a little bit of everything. And like being able to focus and find out about those things and hone in on those things and knowing that anchor institutions are real and that key developments happen. And then when a key commercial development happens, those residential properties around are going to benefit from it because a rising tide lifts all ships. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We saw the opportunity immediately and like, all right, let's jump on this.
Yeah. Like we always talk about following the money, right? So even if you don't have all the cash, there's all these entities putting this money into different projects across the city. The city, the state, everyone that put all those millions of dollars in there have skin in the game on making sure that this is successful. Mm-hmm. So that's going to drive kind of that flow, right? It's going to create that wave to be able to raise all those property values and start to get the interest. And so even for folks that have no idea about Baltimore, because everyone always wants to ask about zip codes or whatever else about the city, the very least you can do is read the newspaper. Like online, just really diving into what's happening, what's locally. Going on the ground locally, so that you can start seeing things like patterns. Wow, I just saw them talking about this neighborhood, you know, last week. Now they're talking about a whole nother development happening over there. Well, how do I dive down? Like, how far are those in between? What properties are over there? So following the money that's already being spent really helps to narrow those types of things
down. And specifically, the real estate section.
Yeah, right.
The business section, not the sports section or the art series. You know, I mean, that's all fun and dandy. But that real estate section, when you see that the state of Maryland just put $20 million into a specific area, that piques your interest. Yeah. Or $30 million, or there's a $100 million TIF, a tax increment financing structure that goes into an area where they basically make a circle and say, everybody who pays property taxes in this area, a portion of those property taxes are going to go towards this specific development. That type of stuff is public knowledge.
Yeah.
So now you have your one home you already purchased in Baltimore. How did you continue to build your portfolio? Most people start with one, and you know, you guys seem like you kind of came out really, like, really lucky because you didn't seem like you had any hiccups. But as you started to build your portfolio, let's share some of the challenges that you faced with building a portfolio and how you overcame those so you can continue to build out what you have now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we bought the first one wrong, right? Yeah. So not only was it on a street called Murder, we were like, so again, you're out of college, you're trying to save money, right? So we had the option of doing a full warranty deed and that would cost another $1,200 or a quick claim deed. And we said, well, let's just save the $1,200.
What's the difference between the two?
So the difference between the two, I explain a quick claim deed as buying a house with all its baggage, right? So what's the baggage? That is the taxes, the water bill, any old mortgages or liens, right? Anything against the property. So when you do a quick claim deed, you're buying the property and all its baggage versus a full warranty deed. You're able to buy a property free of all liens and encumbrances, no baggage, right? Mm-hmm. Just the property. So we bought the property and all its baggage. And in those bags was an $8,000 water bill, And
a $3,000 tax bill.
A $3,000 tax bill. So we didn't swing a hammer before we had to write a check.
And listen, the lender who provided us the construction loan, they weren't going to give us anything until those things were cleared. Yeah. Because the lender wanted to be in first position.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I mean, so we can go all day long. Look, we're so not the people to sit here and act like we went through, like we are valedictorians of school part-time.
Yeah. Summa cum laude, the second property. We're walking through, the auctioneer's giving us all the terms and stuff. Like, all right, cool, cool. We close on it, we acquire, get the private lender, the seller financing terms work. We open up the sink in the kitchen and like the plumbing's loose. I'm like, plumbing ain't supposed to be loose. Is it tied in behind the wall? Turns out they just stuck some plumbing in there and made it look like it was cool. No plumbing running.
Yeah.
We got stories for days.
Stories for days. Yeah.
And then this is your second property.
That was our second property, yeah.
That's the second one. The difference between us and anybody else is that we didn't stop.
Jim.
Mm. Period.
Keep going.
Jim. Period. That's it. Like, that's the only, we didn't have a trust fund. We didn't have an uncle that had been in real estate. We didn't have, you know, we just had, I think at the beginning, we were kind of too young and naive to be scared to start. Mm-hmm. So we didn't deal with that fear. And the second thing I think that was really big for us is that we kept things tight to the chest. Like, we didn't go and tell everybody everything that we were doing until we had too much for anybody to tell us anything. Right. That was really the difference, because for me and Khalil, like, we didn't need any help to be scared. You don't need help. You know, like, you don't need help to have fear going through the process. And so we were able to lean on each other to be able to navigate that. Or sometimes he would be on and I'd be off, and I'd be on and he'd be off. So we had the benefit of balancing between each other. But we just kept going.
Man, bad boys moving silence. That's the key. You got to keep things close to your vest.
Look,
because your family and friends don't know a damn thing.
No.
And they will tell you everything under the blue sun, and they'd be wrong as hell.
Absolutely.
No one thinking it right.
Wrong. And sometimes out of their own, like, it's hard to explain to somebody that you're doing a $130,000 renovation when they make $45,000 a year.
Yeah.
That's a different conversation. So sometimes you can't even fault them for not being able to wrap their heads around it, because the things that a lot of people are doing right now are just so big compared to anything that our parents or their parents really understood. And so now they just look at us and kind of laugh and, like, you know, that's what they do. But you gotta keep that to your chest and make sure you're surrounding yourself with people who are either headed in the direction that you're trying to go or have been where you're trying to get to. Like, that's it. You got to check your circle.
Birds of a feather flock together.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
He said you went from bandos to blocks.
Yes.
So now we're not talking about just one single property. Mm-hmm. How did you guys start building out blocks? Like, what made you start saying, okay, I'm focusing on this area, and we're going to start developing our own community so that way we can, this is no longer Murder Street. This is Happy Street now.
Yeah. Absolutely. The first time was actually an accident, to be completely honest. So we were doing marketing. So we were looking for new deals and new properties. We knew of, again, kind of following the money, we knew of some projects that were coming along and some other developers that were doing some great work. And we found one property on a street that was nearby. But as we were analyzing the deal, we looked across the street and the whole street was empty. And we're like, and half the street we was on were empty. And we're like, if we do this.
The appraiser told us. The appraiser was like, I mean, it's hard to appraise when you got all these other vacants all around.
So it was like, if we're going to do this one, we got to do them all. And that's how that started.
Yeah.
And so we took that one property and then started to marketing to other owners. Because a lot of the properties, and this is something people don't realize about Baltimore, a lot of the vacant properties are actually not city owned. They're owned by individuals. They're owned by people who bought those houses thinking they could get something really cheap and just weren't held accountable to actually getting it done.
It's about 90% of them.
Yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. So how did you guys go about finding who's the owner of these properties?
It's public record. Mm-hmm. So the land records shows you who the owner is. They give you the address where the owner currently lives or receives mail.
Yeah.
And if that information is hard to find, somebody's paying the property taxes. Somebody's paying the water bill. You can always look at those records to find those too.
Yeah, and we're old school. We still send letters. Our letters are pretty. They got their design. We handwrite on the envelopes when we were doing them ourselves and everything.
Old school tactics.
Old school tactics. I wasn't cold calling nobody. So we sent letters and reached out to them. They would call us back, and because we were so targeted and knew exactly what we were looking for, we get a lot of really good responses on when we're actually doing marketing, because we're not out here just trying to do everything everywhere, but really intentional about what it is we're trying to accomplish.
Say that again.
Yeah.
Intentional.
Intentionality. Like, I think sometimes maybe because of the internet and social media or whatever, it's a lot of just kind of jumping around to whatever is cute at the time. But we like to do things with purpose. And so we spend a lot of time, if we're going to do like a marketing push or a campaign, we know what our goals are, like what we're trying to accomplish with these properties, so that even when we're sending the letters out, it's speaking to the owners, right? Mm-hmm. We know what your situation is because, you know, we targeting this one block. I know what's wrong with this block.
Yeah.
So let us help you, you know, let us help you get it done.
And just like our very first one, we sit on the block. And we'll talk to the neighbors and we'll understand what's going on in the area and get to know people. And that's really how you find not only people who will help you out and, hey, I just saw somebody walk into your property. Is that cool? Yeah, that's a plumber. But you'll also find people who care, right, and want to help you and do things politically and otherwise to make sure that you're doing well. And you got all the tools you need to be as successful as possible.
Yeah.
Man. I'm liking this conversation so far, and I think the common theme from a lot of our successful investors is they're everyone's very intentional, and you're hyper focused on what you need to be focused on. You're not scattered all over the place. And then another thing is all the successful investors are doing recon in these areas. They're speaking to the neighbors. They're speaking. They're going to the bodegas. You're meeting the people. You're in the barbershops. You're doing everything that you need to do in those areas to learn the pulse of that area, whereas a lot of people, just because of the internet, they just see things like, oh, I want to go there.
Right.
I want to go there. And they don't really know what the hell they're doing. They don't know the pulse of the community. They don't know anything. And they wind up losing.
Absolutely.
You know, and then they get that bad experience. And then they say, you shouldn't invest in real estate.
Right. Yeah. Real estate is terrible. Or Baltimore is terrible. And the thing about Baltimore, too, another thing that we're really big on is going to the community association meetings. So, like, going to where the people who are making the decisions, who are pulling the strings for the city about if we're trying to do, you know, a city-owned project or whatever, they're going to go to the community association to sign off. Well, we already have relationships there, right? And so being able to build those relationships, hear and understand what the goals of the community are. And so for us, we're going into these neighborhoods and spaces looking to add value there, right? We can't do that from, you know, a 1,000-foot view. We have to know what the people next door want, right? If we want to grow and transform Baltimore in a way that's different than Oakland or Harlem or Brooklyn or some other places where people felt, D.C., felt like things just happened and they had no say in it, for us to not be part of that, we have to be on the ground and next to the people who have been there and always been there so that we're also fulfilling their mission for their own neighborhoods and communities so that we can have development without displacement. We can be able to, you know,
development without displacement.
That's
a gem.
Development
right
without displacement. That's important. Like, we're buying vacant houses and turning them into homes, right? We don't have to push everybody out. And it's so crazy to me because, you know, gentrification by definition is raising the values of a community to middle class standards. So we can argue all day about what middle class actually means, right? But at the end of the day, Auntie Mabel up the street likes to walk her dog, right? She wants to be able to get fresh food on the corner and she wants to, you know, be able to do whatever as well. Yeah. Like, we don't have to leave. We shouldn't have to leave our communities and be there when they have their challenges and not be there when, you know, we can have
trees. When they become beautiful.
Yeah, when they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And so that's part of what we're trying to do is bring and add more life, but not take out and remove the life that's already there.
That's dope.
I love that.
That's dope. You can clap that up for that one. Man.
So, with your homes that you're developing and you guys are building out these communities, so I imagine that you have programs that you're using to help the community as far as renting back from you. And, you know, how did you go about creating those type of relationships and holding these properties and making sure that you're not displacing people, that you're beautifying the community? You are gentrifying the community, but you're not displacing them.
Yeah, that's multifold. There's so many, like, we house kids who are aging out of foster care in our homes. We've helped our tenants edit resumes and keep custody of their kids, right? Mm-hmm. So it's part of that, like as a landlord, being able to do more and add more value to our tenants. But also kind of working within the community association, like what is it that you need? Like how do we help bring in additional resources? Being able to close been doing this for a really long time. We work with some affordable housing nonprofits so that we can work alongside them, bring the expertise and understand how to actually do the homes. And they help make sure that the houses are permanently affordable in the same neighborhoods where we're doing market rate housing. So you have that diversity of housing stock and incomes. And so as we're, you know, we might be flipping a house, there's always that home there for I'm able if she needs it, right? Mm-hmm. And so being able to balance all that out.
And there's an income restriction that disallows anybody who makes a certain income to live in that house. The houses are selling for, 33% less than what the market is, mm-hmm. Which is fantastic because it allows for that person to truly afford a permanently affordable house. And because we develop houses in a way that makes sure that the house that's a market rate is seamless and extremely similar to the house that's a permanently affordable rate,
you can't tell.
We put islands in our permanently affordable housing. We do recessed lights in our permanently affordable housing. Mm-hmm. They're really beautiful in products.
Yeah. People want to live there and they want to take care of
it.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to turn it back into a bando.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And they can be homeowners. And these houses, they're buying these houses. So then you're going from being a tenant to being a homeowner as well, which shifts kind of, that's a mindset shift. Yeah. You might be the first person in your whole family that's ever owned a house.
Yeah. Right.
And so that is also a piece because home ownership is a cornerstone to being able to
Absolutely.
Build that well.
And then we also share information with the community association about like the homestead tax credit that keeps your property taxes low and then phases it in so that you're not all of a sudden hit with a developer like us coming in, doing a bunch of houses, your property taxes shoot up immediately. Yeah. Instead, it phases in over 10 years.
Yeah.
The renter's tax credit. There's all kind of different programs.
Renter's tax credit.
The renter's tax credit. I've never heard that. Yeah. So the state of Maryland has a renter's tax credit. The idea is that a renter, part of their rent is going towards the property taxes for the owner. Mm-hmm. So that's how it's justified. Yeah. But the renter's tax credit is a check from the state. It's between $1,000 and $1,500. And it's written out to the tenant so that the tenant can afford to live in their home.
Yeah. So if the property value is increasing and then the taxes are increasing, they're assuming that the landlord is also increasing your rent. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to offset the rent increase through the renter's tax credit.
Who has to apply for that? The landlord or the tenant?
The tenant has to apply. Which is part of the challenge of getting people into doing that.
Informing the community. wink.
Right.
So making sure that the community association knows, so that the people in the community know, and that information is disseminated to everybody who needs it.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Maryland, the state of Maryland, and the home has to be at a certain price point. What is tax credit? Like, what are some of the qualifications?
No. So it's really just as long as the renter kind of shows that they are income restricted and they need the help. Mm-hmm. That's the only real criteria. Of course, there's documents and paperwork and things that they have to fill out in the process
it's
to go through.
It's mostly paperwork.
Yeah.
And so that's when the challenge comes in because they don't want to do the paperwork. So you as the landlord will probably have to step in, hold their hand a little bit, tell them everything's going to be okay. Let them know it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
Let's get this paperwork done so you can get this benefit.
Yep.
Absolutely.
How long does it take for, because dealing with the government, always some time restraints, right?
Yeah.
How long does it take for this to kick in?
So I've heard, a month or two?
Yeah, it's not terribly long. I think the biggest thing, because they have a pretty strong pot of money because it's not a whole lot of people doing it. So it's not usually a long waiting period. It's really just the math of how they calculate how much cash you get, but they do it every single year.
The state of Maryland is a very wealthy state. It's one of the top.
Yeah.
Well, Maryland's very wealthy.
They got it. They definitely got it. Yeah.
Look, I like that. I've never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody who's watching this, everybody here, if you're looking to invest in Maryland, Baltimore, you need to start looking into these different programs. And, a couple of our investors are heavy with especially with your rentals, using all these programs, because people only think Section 8, but there's so many different programs in Baltimore. Like, name something else that might be an interest to the audience.
So, I always get it mixed up, BHRP or BRHP. I get the letters mixed up all the time. BRHP, that's a Baltimore Regional Housing Partnership is another organization in Baltimore that's similar to Section 8 in that they provide vouchers. Usually it's above market. But some of the differences are that the The tenant actually has an assigned worker, like assigned manager, case manager, who will come to the house and like check things out. And, you know, they are making sure that your house is in good standing. They're making sure that the tenant has the resources to find the jobs and keep jobs. And they're kind of balancing based on the market rate and how much the tenant's making, how, you know, how much they're subsidizing. But that's one of, like, personally, that's one of my favorite programs because it is seamless. You still get it on the first of the month, but there's more resources and support for the tenant. And then you have
St. Ambrose is a great program. Mm-hmm. It's a nonprofit in Baltimore that basically provides tenants and funding for tenants, mm-hmm. who, for landlords and owners who want a house hack.
So
if you have an extra room or an extra apartment or something, you can get a tenant, subsidize it, and St. Ambrose will provide the funding.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. So they're promoting house hacking?
Right.
Yeah.
Indirectly. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah. And then you don't even have to have a separate unit, right? So you can be in a single family home, and sometimes people feel like they can't house hack that, right? You need multiple units. Well, with St. Ambrose, you can rent a room through St. Ambrose to an individual person, and they have a voucher to help support that.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's a gem right there.
Yeah.
House hacking through programs.
House hacking through programs.
Gotta love,
it's real.
Gotta love Maryland.
Right.
You gotta love Maryland. I love this.
So let's talk about you guys own blocks, about mm-hmm. how many properties you own right now, and are you cash flowing? And of course, you're buying a hold. So I can imagine you guys aren't in this to flip. You're here to create community and hold onto these properties.
Yeah, so we have a mixture. So one of the things that we've found, especially as we tapped into what the communities want and the city wants, is that they want to build home ownership. They have plenty of renters, right? And so they want to build home ownership to help create that wealth, make sure people have ownership in what's happening in their neighborhoods. You tend to see when people own that they place a little bit more value to what's going on. So we've been kind of balancing between our rental portfolio, which we had, you know, well over 20 units by the time we were 30. But some of the block projects has been, how do we transfer these vacant houses into homes and create homeowners in the process? Right now, I mean, we have six or seven active renovation projects.
Nice.
Right this moment. Mm-hmm.
These are for sale flips.
Yeah, these are for sale. Yep. We have three that are about to close in the next, 4 weeks.
We've been in control of, because it's not necessarily how much you own, right? It's what you're in control of.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that through different entities and things like that, but hundreds of different properties that we've been in control of over the years. So just to give a little timeline, we started with the rentals. We built our rental portfolio so that back in 2015-16, we both left our permanent jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had enough money from our rental incomes to sustain our life. And then we decided to flip. We could have definitely sat on those rentals, paid them off, kept, you know, snowballing by another rental every year and been completely fine. But we wanted to flip. So we started doing that, and then we scaled that business up so that we have multiple flips that are in the different processes and different phases currently.
Yeah.
To the point where we looked at our construction company, our A-team, right, our primary GC. He had an event where one of his partners exited. He was looking for a partner, so we acquired it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we recently acquired a construction company, which is great, and increased our standing and increased our bandwidth and capacity and controlled our cost, vertically integrated.
Prices got too high. We had to make sure we control what was
going on. Yeah, we had to control it.
Prices
up.
Yeah, up. And it was kind of stuck.
And you know how we do over here.
So let's speak about bandwidth, right?
Yeah.
You guys got a new project that you're working on, right? So the floor is yours with this one, because this is something special.
It's on the screen. I see something special.
It's on the screen right now. So let's talk about your new baby.
Yeah, it is our new baby. This one's fun. So the RFP came out. So for those who don't know, an RFP is a request for proposals. So a city or a private person has some land and they say, I don't know what to do with it. Give me a proposal, multiple people. Whoever has the best, they win. So we submitted, a bunch of people did, and we won.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we're going to be building about 50 houses, brand new townhouses right by Johns Hopkins Hospital.
Wow. That's amazing. So it's on the screen right now. So tell us about what we're looking at on the screen right now, because this rendering looks beautiful.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. So our architect is great. This is in an area called Eager Park. It's a brand new area in Baltimore City, like I said, right by Johns Hopkins Hospital. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, back in early 2000s, a lot of people were displaced mm-hmm. out of this area. And eminent domain allowed the city to capture a lot of houses. Mm-hmm. They were bandos, they were vacants, they were boarded. Now people got paid to leave, right? And they happily received their check. And
what's eminent domain for the people mm-hmm. who don't know what that is?
Eminent domain is basically when a property is so disinvested that the city has to take over.
Right. Okay. Or the city decided they had something better to do with that space. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So between those two.
Yeah. So they basically come and say, look, we're going to commandeer your shit and get the hell up out of here. Basically.
Either fix it or we're taking it.
Yeah. Or we're taking it, or we're taking it.
Yeah, that's what we're taking. Eminent domain, they're taking it. Because they're doing that in parts of Atlanta.
Yeah.
When they start expanding highways, they will just literally, they're going to take your home.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that happens often. So now, what happened from there?
Yeah, so from there, this 88-acre area was parceled off and then sold to mm-hmm. different folks. This was beginning in, call it 2005, until now. So now there's a new hotel there. There's a bunch of new food retail mm-hmm. in the area. There's
Starbucks.
There's a Starbucks.
No, we That's all love that. When we see the Starbucks on Target. We're like, know. Yeah, we're up now.
There's a brand new beautiful school, mm-hmm. state of the art. It was the first school built in this area in the last 25 years or so. Mm-hmm. There's a brand new park with outdoor workout equipment with playground and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's a beautiful area. It does have a difficult history. So part of the RFP was, okay, we need people who can bring back displaced folks, mm-hmm. folks who left and want to come back. We have to provide housing for them. So affordable housing was part of it. Mm-hmm. Economic inclusion was part of it. So providing opportunities to businesses that are minority-owned, women-owned, local businesses, and a whole bunch of different things. But we put the team together. Shout out to the other small minority-owned developer, Mason Dixon and Properties. And we have a very strong team, and we won. Mm-hmm. But the best part about this, mm-hmm. and the best part about this for me, I should say, is that my former employer, who I left a while ago, competed for this project.
And they lost. That's a gem. We love that. They competed and took an L.
Yeah. Sometimes you work so hard, it's okay just to be a little petty. It's okay.
We're petty over here at the Ransom Show.
So you guys got all this going on. I think we want to start with, okay, you started with one property. You started going into buying blocks. You know, what are some small, simple steps? Like, this is huge. Like, you've gotten here. Let's talk to someone that is looking to just develop a block. Mm-hmm. Tell them how you went about it, like financing, just some quick things, and where they need to go to find this government funding and get all these resources. So that way, that most of us think we just got to do all of these things out of pocket. And talking to you all, you're like, oh no, I'm using the resources that are available to me, so mm-hmm. I can, you know, leverage those to create my portfolio.
So the first thing, because everyone wants to buy the block, right? That's mm-hmm. a pretty dope hashtag.
Absolutely.
Not everybody really knows and understand the work that that goes behind being able to say, like, I did that, right? And so for me, it's really important to set that stage because I'm very glad that we started with, you know, kind of building up as we got there. Because buying a block, that means that there is a block of properties that have been disinvested or are sitting vacant. For you to buy and renovate and develop this block, especially for not only rental housing, but also in particular, being able to flip the property, you're not just selling the house, you're selling the entire neighborhood, mm-hmm. right? Then when you think about trying to finance the properties and doing things like that, your appraisals, evaluations and stuff, you're creating the market. You're creating your own comps.
Yeah.
Like, that's work. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about that as developers, we talk about being the first loser. Because that's the truth of the matter. When you're starting on that block, you're starting from behind because you're creating the wave that you're going to get to at the end. And so I'm so big on setting that foundation. Like, you're not going to get the BS from me. You have to understand that they're going into that project, you have to know that that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so get off of that. So how do you find it? You know what I mean? Okay, I'm going to get off of that.
I like that you stayed there, because now let's talk about it. So let's say you bought your first block, you got the first property. How were you able to develop this property, set the comps to get the next one and the next one and the next one?
Yeah.
Like, what did you do to ensure that you can continue to bring these values up? Because that is what buying the block is about.
That's what it's all about. So the first one, we had to set the stage to be able to really tell our story. Like, you have to control mm-hmm. that narrative and be very intentional about who your listing agent is. Do they buy into your entire vision? And then really being able to market the entire neighborhood. We started to work with the community associations and other developers in the area about what they were doing, because now your success is my success. So how do I help you get your project that you said you were going to start 6 months ago off the ground?
Right?
Because we all need to be able to do this together. So it's a lot of networking. You get from, you get out of, you know, really analyzing this individual deal to really working through, like, how do I underwrite this entire neighborhood? Like, it's a different conversation. And then you bring in, you know, city councilmen, and all this political stuff comes in as well. It's different than just, I'm going to do the 65 or 70% rule at this point. It doesn't work that way. But for your first project, you have to really budget that's not going to sell as quickly as your other ones. If you're going to, if you're trying to flip, or even if you're doing rentals, chances are you're funding with probably short-term capital, money that you're kind of coming in, you got a construction loan or something, you have to pay those off faster, typically. And so you have to build into your budget the fact that you're probably going to need to sit on this one a little bit longer than the others. You have to have, you need to have that plan. You got to have money. This isn't like the no money debt. This definitely.
No money.
This
ain't the no 100% money. Financing.
This ain't the no credit. Like, this ain't, you're not there yet if that's the conversation you're trying to have. So you want to have everything set up where if you're going to work with short-term capital, you have more patient capital or money that can 15, 30 year refinance money that you have ready to go if you're trying to keep the property as a rental. And whoever you're working with, we always talk about you want to build your well before you're thirsty. So you're building those relationships with those lenders early on so that they're not paying as much attention to the numbers of the properties because they might be a little bit janky when you're starting, right?
But
they know and understand you, right? Yeah. They're investing in you and your vision and what you're able to do more so than the numbers on the first few deals, because that can be hard. So you have to have like a bigger game and, you know, a larger vision to really be able to do it, especially in spaces like Baltimore.
So, you know, Baltimore is one of those cities that I personally feel gets redlined a lot.
Mm. Right? Oh, absolutely. Oh, it's the birthplace of redlining.
Yeah, it's definitely the birthplace
literally,
of redlining,
yeah.
Right? So now, how are you guys getting the funding and the financing for a project of this scale when it's the birthplace of redlining?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those relationships.
The relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we're fortunate in this project where a lot of the other developments have already happened. Right?
The
comps are stronger at this point.
Yeah.
Like Kiara said, there's a Starbucks, we got the Walgreens, there's a hotel there. There's a lot of different amenities in the area. So the market is there at this point. But when you're first starting out buying a block, I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
And what we learned that that had we gone back in time for our first block and done it again over, you got to get the city involved as quickly as possible. Mm. Department of Housing, the Housing Authority, whomever has cash, because it's a mindset shift. Every city wants to increase the population.
Mm-hmm.
They want to provide housing. They want to provide jobs. Right. So when you think about it, OK, if the city wants to provide housing, they want to incentivize that, and they will pay dollars through grants in order to help people build houses in areas that otherwise are disinvested.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have the idea and the plan and the numbers don't quite work, you reach out to the city. Look, this is the pro forma, the financial model, the capital stack. This is the gap.
Yeah.
This is what I need you, Mr. or Mrs. Mayor, to participate in.
Yeah.
So let's talk about capital stack, right? We're on the same page. You know, it's the same thing. Capital stack. Break down, what is a capital stack and how do you go about on the capital stack?
So the capital stack is essentially a stack of money, right? It's how the project is funded. So you got your debt at, you know, somewhere between 60 to 80% loan to value. Typically, it's 65. You got your equity, the money that you're putting in or your investors are putting in. And then you have like tax credits. You can have grants. You can have a few other items. But that's the capital stack. It's the stack of money that allows you to do a development deal, whether it's one house or it's 50 houses.
I like that. That was a good breakdown. That was a gem for those, because I know a lot of people, when they hear cap, they don't know what the hell that means. So, you know, you got to break that down for
people. Yeah,
absolutely. So when you guys first started off, like, you know, I always like to bring it back down to step one, because everybody always looks at, you know, they don't look at someone's chapter 20 when you're on chapter one, right?
Absolutely.
So let's just say they want to buy one property or develop one property. They could still go to go and find these programs that will help them develop one property, because what the key word here and what I'm starting to find is you're not talking about what you're doing for yourself. So if you're like, I'm going to develop this property because I want it to be affordable housing for this area, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to help this community. And if I can do this property and set the comp, then I can buy this property and that one. So how do you kind of create that package? And like you said, just Google, go to different places, but you're finding the money. What I see the key sense is you're using other people's money, but you're not using lenders' money. You are going for the government grants and programs, and you're basically changing communities.
Yeah. And there's something really specific that you said. I want to touch on it really quickly. And the next one, and the next one, and then do more, right? You have to be able to articulate the vision. At the end of the day, yes, $40,000 into a house from a grant is great. Everybody has to start with one house, but they also have to know what that vision is, that bigger vision. They want to put $400,000 into 10 houses.
Right.
They don't want to just do one house and then you leave and back out and that's it.
Yeah.
So being able to say, yes, we're doing one now because we have to get started, but this one's vacant, this one's vacant. I've contacted the owner here under contract. We have everything ready to rock and roll. Let's do this first one year one, and then let's scale up very quickly, very aggressively, so that you guys can see what we can do. That's important for people who are looking to leverage those funds.
Yeah, and what close, especially with in Baltimore specifically, having kind of that vision and a bigger package is really how you get most of that money, right? In Baltimore, it's so easy to get money to buy a property that you're going to live in. They just like throwing money at that, which is amazing. But as an investor, if you don't have like a package, it's harder to get the grant funds until you're in like a bigger space, until you're doing a block or things like that. But in the meantime, it's about being creative with your funding sources. So having the audacity to ask an auctioneer to seller finance. Talking about having the audacity to ask.
You asked me to sell or fight. I'm an auction house,
Having the audacity to ask and being okay with hearing no, because a no now isn't a no forever, especially in this market.
That's
and in
gem.
this real estate.
Close mouth, don't get fed.
Period. At all. Having that audacity to ask, being creative, understanding, like checking your own mindset around money. Like they literally print that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And in this past year, they had that on overdrive, right? Everybody gotta get money. So understanding kind of shifting that mindset, because the money is out there. It's just really about you putting yourself in a position to get a hold of that, because you probably know somebody that has a bunch of money just sitting in a bank account somewhere, earning nothing on it. Well, maybe you can put that money to work a little bit better and be able to leverage that to do your own portfolio. So we've always been really creative with how we've structured our rental property to be able to roll those funds or whatever we want to do into other projects that we were doing, if we were using hard money or nonprofits or whatever else to do more.
Everything's a tool.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, how about this? You said there has to be a package, right?
Yeah.
You know, from a realtor standpoint, I pretty much know what should be in the package, but I want you to share with someone that, listen, I want to buy this house and I know it's in an area that's a little challenging. Mm-hmm. What are three things I need to put in my package before I start Googling the government funding and funding from my community? What are three main things I need to know so I can also create my own package so I can start leveraging these funds?
Mm-hmm.
The first one is the finances.
Period. Yes.
You got to have your numbers.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, that's just, that's where you can ask for the gap.
Yeah.
Whether that's 10,000 or 100,000, mm-hmm. that's where you can know what your construction costs are, or your closing costs, your acquisition, all the different expenses that go through your carry costs, which a lot of people miss.
Yeah.
You got to have those financials.
Yeah.
In that package.
Yeah, the numbers are important, and then you got to be able to show your capacity to actually do the job. Mm-hmm. So what's your experience? Who's on your team? What's your construction company doing? What have they done? What have you done? So having showing
where's
that.
Where's the receipts?
Give me the receipts, bro. Mm-hmm. Let me know that if I'm giving you this money, that you know what to do with it, right? And so that's going to be really big as number two. And then the third is the vision. You got to be able to tell the story. You have to be able to connect with the person making the decisions and controlling the purse strings that they're investing in something that's larger so that they have a story to tell to whoever they're accountable yeah. to, right? Yeah. You got to give them the language to sell it.
Man, lots of gems in this episode from Bando to Blocks, man. A lot of information. So rants and gems. We like to always end mm-hmm. with a rant, mm-hmm. you know.
I do that well.
And a gem. So give us a rant. What's pissing you off right now? We want to know.
All right, so I'm going to take it back because y'all mentioned The Wire. And so I said,
I'm mad. I'm sorry. I'm trending that.
Let me break it down.
Because on the outside, that's what we're seeing.
Me and String of Bell was friends, though. In my head. Yeah.
They love that show. They love them some Omar. But you know what? That put such a, The Wire and Baltimore became synonymous, yeah. right? And it was a great show, but it's terrible branding for the city. Like, it's terrible yeah. branding. And the truth of the matter is, Baltimore has Bandos, and they have multi-million dollar houses, and they ain't but 2-3 miles apart,
yeah.
right? And so when we talk about Baltimore, we have to be very careful about labeling it with one broad brush, understanding that there is a lot. And even the things that you think about with Baltimore with crime or whatever else, a lot of times if you really narrow that down to where a lot of that stuff's happening, you might pick 4, 5, 6 corners. Mm. And that's it, right? And so we have, like, I'm very, like, sensitive on that specifically because it paints one broad brush. There's so much going on in Baltimore. We are, in a space where we got 4 floors that all look at water, and we're in got an elevator inside
talk
the house.
Talk your shit, girl.
Okay?
No, talk your shit. What's the name of that place you guys got? It's the outdoor place you can go eat the food and, come on.
That's where all the seafood
is? All the seafood, not the wharf, though. Not the wharf.
At the harbor?
At the harbor! See, since you're from there, it's not a big deal to you. But let me tell you, for us out of town, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
And you can go out there, you can eat, and it's so beautiful there, and it's so gorgeous. So I can understand your frustration.
Yeah, there's a lot of beautiful places. We got the best food. We have amazing culture.
I ain't going to even hold you up on the food part.
The food, bro.
The seafood is next level.
And we have so many new restaurants. Like, there's a lot of development. There's a lot of money hitting the street in Baltimore mm-hmm. right now. There's good. So much happening. And so, we got to see that. We got to see opportunity in our neighborhoods.
So the rant is stop calling B-More on The Wire.
Stop we are not, no, not The Wire.
Stop.
Can I get a rant? I get one
get
too.
Your rant.
Get a rant.
Yo, when people come in, they buy a house and they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They buy a bando. They want these dollar houses. They heard about some ancient program from once upon a time.
You got Okay, no, you said that like it was a quick little clip. But you have to kind of expound about that just a little bit. Just a little bit about these dollar houses. How it works, if they're still available, and I understand your rant, but you got to say, this is my rant, but this is the solution.
Yes.
All right, then.
Give me the rant and the gem on that.
Yeah. So the rant and the gem. All right, so the dollar house program back in the 80s, 1980s, they had a program, you can buy a dollar house, and then you fix it up, right? Mm-hmm. The caveats to that, the city had a bunch of money, they could lend it out, mm-hmm. right? So you got low interest loans to help fix it out. These dollar houses were in very specific areas. They weren't the whole city. Mm-hmm. The program's no longer here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. And in our opinion, it's probably not going to come back,
mm-hmm.
Whether that's good or bad. So, when people come into Baltimore, they find affordable vacant houses that they want to buy and they want to fix up and they want to rent and sell, but then they get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
That's my rant, right? Mm-hmm. So my gem on that is, find some mentors, run the numbers, know the comps, drive the area, understand the area. Can you be successful in Baltimore?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, right? Mm-hmm. We have all been, we have mentees. Yeah, we have tons of people who we know who are very successful in scaling and growing, mm-hmm. Specifically in the area, but like take the time to make sure that you, you do it the right way. Right.
That's the gym.
That's the gym. Do your due diligence. Right. Yeah. Do your research.
All $5,000 houses ain't good deals.
Yeah.
Everything that glitters ain't gold, huh?
Right.
That's what they say, right?
That's what they say. That's what they tell
you. Got a gym for us? Because you gave us a rant.
I'm great at rants. No, the gym, I think the gym really is like we're in a time where we have the opportunity and the ability to take control of what's happening in our neighborhoods. Mm. And it's time to do it.
It's time to do
it. I love that.
Gentrify our own hoods.
All right. Do we have any questions? Anyone have any questions for us?
They quiet.
Okay, they quiet.
They quiet. So look, this was a great episode. Thank you guys for coming all the way from B-More, all the way down here to Wakanda.
Right.
And joining us and, you know, showing us a project, because this is something that you guys haven't told anyone in internet world yet. So thank you for dropping the exclusive here on the Rants and Gym Show. We definitely appreciate you guys. Tell the people how to find you, how to hit you guys up. If they want to join one of your programs, let them know.
Yeah, you can find us at Charm City Buyers everywhere, so on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube. And you can check us out at charmcitybuyers.com. We have a really dope, completely free class all about what's happening in Baltimore and why people all over the country need to be investing in Baltimore right alongside us. So you can find that at charmcitybuyers.com.
I love that.
I love it. So look, man, thank you guys again. Matt Garland here, and MLS number 58700, better known as MG the Mortgage Guy.
And I am Kiana Watson, broker extraordinaire, license number 317576. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Rants and Gym Show.
Peace.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.